Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we have great pleasure to introduce Dr. Gary Habermas, who has been teaching at Liberty University for years. His title now is Distinguished Research Professor. He's the author of more than 40 books, 20 of which have dealt with the resurrection of Jesus Christ and some on the Shroud of Turin. And that's what we want to really focus on now. Is there scientific, is there archaeological evidence for the resurrection of Jesus? Dr. Habermas, thank you so much for joining us on the radio here.
Well, Jerry, I'm glad to be with you again. I always have a good time with you.
Okay, so tell me, sir, do you believe that the Shroud of Turin is actually the burial cloth of Jesus Christ? And for those not familiar with it, tell us what the Shroud is in the first place.
Okay, well, first question first. A lot of people, when I lectured, they're interested whether I, you know, what I think. And I think to myself, you know, it's really not important what I think. I tell people it really does depend, as silly as it sounds, but to get the point across, it really does depend what day of the week it is. The Shroud, I just had an experience this week of a counter article being written against the Shroud, and my probabilities on whether I think the Shroud is accurate go up and down, according to, you know, where the research goes. I mean, I think science ought to be that way, because science gets adjusted as an inductive discipline. It gets adjusted by data. As far as what the Shroud is, it is a linen 3-to-1 weave, linen cloth, measuring just about 14 feet, 3 inches long, and just a tad over 3.5 feet wide. So, 14.5 by 3.5. And it looks like a real burial garment. It covered a man from head to toe, so it was wrapped lengthwise around the body. From head to toe, the shroud is open at the feet. So it would have started at the feet, gone up around the head, looped around underneath, and come back down to the feet again. But what is most interesting about the shroud is that there's a double image corresponding to the front of the body and the back of the backside. I don't mean the
right, I'm talking about right.
The back,
the front and back of the bodies.
The man who was of the man who was crucified, right, as opposed to the back of the cloth. That's a whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the man appears to be crucified. He has been whipped very severely, over 100 whipping marks across his body. And some of that's estimated because the shroud was involved in two fires, one of which damaged it rather severely, and estimates have to be made, you know, from the areas we do have whipped, how many marks were underneath the burned areas. But he's been pressed throughout the scalp with a series of sharp objects, and not like a diadem, not like a little thin crown, but kind of more like a skull cap all the way through his head.
So the crown of thorns.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, the crown of thorns.
That sort of thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he is also accompanied with five major wounds that we come to associate with Jesus' crucifixion, namely wrists, two wrists as opposed to hand wounds, mm-hmm. and two in the feet. But it looks like because the body's in a state of rigor mortis and the left foot is twisted toward the right foot, there's wounds in both feet, but it looks like one nail may have held both feet.
Mm.
And then, of course, there's a side wound, from which a lot of blood has flowed from this lower chest wound down to the waist and then around the back. So that's it. The man is covered with blood all over his body. It's a very gruesome sort of thing. I guess one thing I could say that would help your listeners visualize a little bit is that the shroud was one of the artifacts, I am told, or I've read this, that the shroud was one of the artifacts that was taken into consideration for the movie on Jesus' death, The Passion of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And as bloody and gory as that movie is, one of the reasons is because the shroud was a source for that. So that gives you an idea.
Now, you were saying you can go back and forth as to whether you believe the shroud is genuinely that of Christ or something else. Apart from the shroud, what are your views on Jesus Christ's resurrection as an historical fact, or what?
Sure. Let me back up on that probability thing. Yeah, I do go up and down on the probabilities, but I don't go, like, I don't generally say to myself, the shroud's a fake. I don't go there. I'd say if somebody wants to talk in terms of a range of probabilities, I'll think the shroud is between, like, 60 and 85, somewhere in that range. I don't go down to, like, 30 or 40 and think the shroud's a fake. As far as my view in the historical Jesus...
And the resurrection.
I definitely think Jesus was a figure of history. One of my works is writing that argues that there's about a dozen and a half extra-biblical sources for Jesus, all of them non-Christian, hence all of them outside the New Testament, and that you can learn about 50 to 60 items about Jesus and the earliest church without ever opening a Christian book. As far as the resurrection, the more I study the resurrection, and my specialty is in that area, and I've been dealing with the resurrection for decades, 21 books, that's a lot on one topic. And I have never been as sure as I am today that Jesus has been raised from the dead. And as intriguing as the shroud gets, even when I'm at my highest point, let's just say for the sake of the argument, someday I feel like the shroud's 90%. I still don't think the evidence for the shroud corresponds in terms of beating the worth of the evidence in history. In other words, the historical argument is far stronger, and I've said that in print, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, some people say, well, anybody who knows about the shroud, they say, oh, well, that thing was dismissed as a fake in, what, 1988 because of carbon-14 dating. Your comment.
Right. Yeah, well, right now, that is kind of totally up in the air. I mean, it's up in the air for a few reasons. One major researcher, John Jackson, who might be the best-known name associated with shroud research, he's a theoretical physicist, or used to be when he taught at a couple of universities like the Air Force Academy. He believes that we're never going to get a good date on the shroud, pro or con, no matter what it is. If it comes out the first century, still wasn't helpful because the shroud has been involved in two fires, and since fire and water are two of the main things that change chemicals, and by the way, when the first fire in the 16th century, when the cloth almost was destroyed totally, it was doused in water to put it out. So the shroud's been treated with fire and water. And John Jackson would argue, look, you're not going to get a good date on the shroud no matter what because carbon-14 measures carbon and fire produces carbon. So, I mean, it's not that simple, but my point is you're going to add to carbon content and so on. A second argument came out in an article just about 15 years after that carbon dating date was published, and it was by Ray Rogers, who was the chief chemist. And somebody might say, well, he's just prejudiced because he wants it to be a miracle. He starts this peer-reviewed chemical journal article out by saying, hey, I don't even want to talk about miracles. I don't even like this subject. I don't like this kind of chat. This is not something I'm even basically caring about, is kind of how the article starts. And then he goes on and says, when you look at the threads from the two shroud investigation times, the 1978 extensive testing, and then the limited testing in 1988 on the C-14, he says, look, this isn't my view, but this is a chemistry under an electron microscope. And he said, all I can tell you is threads from both pieces, which he had, threads from both pieces are not the same. Mm. He says, I'm just telling you, they are chemically different under a microscope. So whatever they dated in 88 wasn't the same thing that was taken off in 78. And he hypothesizes, if I remember the article correctly, that possibly what they dated in 88 was about 60% original date of the shroud, whatever that is, and 40% medieval. In other words, it could have been a medieval patch with some other threads mixed in that were, I mean, the original date of the shroud, but with a medieval thread or two or three or whatever. Now, to be honest, that has recently been counteracted in the same journal, a peer-reviewed chemical journal, by some chemists who argue that Ray Rogers, the author, was not, he didn't get it exactly right, and that the research now is, 10-ish years later, is a little different. One more argument about the carbon-14 that's very important is that just a couple years ago, an Italian university in the appropriate, I forget what area of science it is, whether it was laser physics or something like that, but they judged that the shroud was first century A.D., plus or minus 250 years. Now,
Wow. Granted,
250 years is a long time.
Yeah.
But also, there's a lot of time between first century plus or minus 250 years and 1260, 1300, which is the carbon dating date. So,
right.
I think this is, Jerry, I think this is a point you might say it's not so much on the dating. It's not so much faith versus science. It's science versus science.
Right.
And some of the tests just conflict. So we have to keep working, and the date is certainly a major question to keep working on.
But let's look at the big picture here. In 1978, several scientists who helped, they were involved in, putting man on the moon and so forth. 1978, they come over, they get, they have allowance of 120 hours round the clock to inspect and evaluate the Shroud of Turin. Several scientists, many from the U.S.
Yeah, about three dozen, actually.
Okay, now, many of them, or some of them, it was reported to say that they expected to be able to prove this thing was a fake within an hour or something like that. And instead, this began all sorts of scientific research, and now, even a few dozen years later, there's still some of those people actually believe, no, this is the real thing. This was the burial cloth of Jesus Christ.
I'd say that is probably, well, these are different conclusions, but your first one, this is a real thing. In other words, whoever it wrapped, it's an actual archaeological artifact. That is almost the unanimous view.
So in other words, there was a man that was crucified, and he was inside that Shroud of Turin.
Right.
Whether it was Jesus of Nazareth. It wasn't painted. Okay. Oh, that's important. All right.
So, I mean, I guess you could say if you're dead convinced it's medieval, you could say, wow, this poor soul was crucified in the Middle Ages. But the point is that it's an actual guy who was crucified, according to the vast majority of them, not a really cunning painter who put the guy on there in paint.
Now, one of the things that really shocked me when I first started learning about the Shroud, and I'm convinced, by the way, it is genuinely Jesus Christ. One of the things that was interesting is that the blood is human blood, but it saw no decay, and it wasn't smudged. What this means is that the man in the shroud was housed in the shroud. It was wrapped on him, and he somehow went through it without, it being pulled off. Like if you pulled off a Band-Aid, and your blood gets smeared, or the leftovers of your blood get smeared. But there was no such thing, and the blood didn't see decay. So he was in that cloth for less than 72 hours.
The blood. Let's put it this way. There's no decomposition on the cloth.
Yeah.
So, and there's more than just blood there. Yeah, and you used the example of the Band-Aid. Let's keep in mind that Band-Aids are made as much as possible. What do the commercials say? Non-stick. If your body has lesions all over it, and you're literally all over it, over 100, and you're torn up and bleeding, and someone puts a linen cloth across your body, how do you not break those linen stains if you a Band-Aid's bad enough, you're right, but a linen sheet, you're going to tear those scabs up right and left.
So what this means is that he somehow went through the cloth without that blood seeing decomposition.
Right. Now, you've got a lot of listeners now who might be skeptics who are rolling their eyes and going, yeah, you Christians, you. But John Jackson, the guy I mentioned earlier, this theoretical chemist, the theoretical physicist, he actually did a computer model. You have to explain the blood marks on the shroud. There's some really odd ones where the blood flows straight out on the side. You wonder, how did it do that? And he argues in a published journal article years ago that the only way to get the shroud image is a body that, well, okay, for colloquial would be disappears. But the body has to go through the cloth, and the cloth has to collapse in order to get the kind of image you have. So that argument's out there, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a snapshot of the resurrection, like a Polaroid, poof. You know,
well,
when Christ rose from the dead.
The first shroud books that came out in 1978 by an Oxford University grad, Ian Wilson, the conclusion of the book was the shroud could very well be a photograph of the resurrection. And again, people sneer, but here's the deal. It is a quasi-photograph. It's a photograph with light, darkness, left, right, reversal. It has photographic properties, and there are hundreds of burial garments in existence, and none of them have images. Mm-hmm. They have decomposition, they have blood stains, if you count those as images, but there's nothing like an image of a man where you can, as it has been, as you can send it around to dozens of pathologists, medical doctors, and guys who regularly decide causes of death, and they can look at it and say, man, this is just incredibly correct in anatomical terms. So with hundreds of burial cloths, there's nothing to compare it to.
Wow.
And then now a conclusion with this Italian university that indeed it is some type of it was another study done about the same time as the dating at the Italian university, decided that it was a type of radiation. And that's not just the Italian university. That's the conclusion of many studies. In fact, I think it's fair to say that the radiation caused the image theory is probably the major thesis and conclusion. And the shroud is the most investigated piece of archaeological data of any piece of anything in the world.
So it is not easily dismissed.
That's a real, now that much is a real understatement.
Okay. Dr. Gary Habermas, again, of Liberty University. I know you've written some books on it. What's the most latest and current book? What do you want to refer us to?
Well,
for more information,
quickly, both of them are with Ken Stevenson and myself, Gary Habermas. Ken, by the way, was one of the fellows who was there for the 1978 investigation. He was
super.
Also an Air Force Academy professor. That book is called Verdict on the Shroud, 1981. And the second one is called The Shroud and the Controversy, and it's 1990. Verdict on the Shroud and The Shroud and the Controversy. They're both out of print, but, you know, these days you can get them online. So.
Yeah. Okay. Gary Habermas, thanks so much. At the end of the day, he is risen. Bottom line, whether the shroud is real or not.
Indeed. And like I said, we've got the history, whatever the shroud is. So.
Absolutely. And you have a website, right? GaryHabermas.com?
I do. Thanks for mentioning that. GaryHabermas.com. No bells, whistles, uppercase, lowercase, just Gary, HABERMAS.com. And they can find all kinds of things on there about the shroud and the resurrection.
Thank you so much. God bless you.